Hello and welcome to HFMA Talk, the podcast for NHS Finance. I'm Debbie Patterson, Senior Technical Manager at the HFMA, and today I'm joined by my colleague Lisa Robertson, who is a Senior Policy Manager here at the HFMA. Given the time of year, this podcast is looking at the financial year end, the issues that we think you need to consider, and the resources that the HFMA has produced to help you. So Lisa, let's start with the end of the process, the audit. Are there any changes to the audit that our members need to be aware of?
Thanks, Debbie, and hi, everyone listening. Yeah, it's actually, I think it's quite nice to look to the end of the process first and have a bit of an end in sight for both finance teams and the auditors working on it. Perhaps that kind of common goal of as quick and painless an audit opinion process as possible is one to have an eye on. But I think for this year, it's not so much about the changes for audit, but probably a reminder of the key areas of focus for the auditors that you will all see every year, really. So things that you'll recognise, like income recognition, estimates and judgments and accruals that auditors would always ask you about, large items like property, plant and equipment, as well as those things like journals, agreements and balances, and just the controls. So probably no surprises, but they will be asked again and on an ongoing basis. Mainly, I think, because it's probably helpful to know that auditors are working to their code of practice and they have got their professional standards. They're very heavily regulated in the public sector. So there is a lot that they have to look at, and there's a lot that they have to evidence themselves that they have looked at, because they will in effect be audited themselves. So they will on that basis focus on the new items, the large items, they'll focus on the really risky items. They do have to maintain a professional scepticism all the time. So you will hear them asking you a lot, what is the evidence of that? And it's not just that they don't believe you, they genuinely have to not believe you until they've seen the evidence. So it can feel a little bit of an ongoing process, but it is something that they have to do, really. So yeah, not too much new, but don't be surprised. The same things will be asked that you've heard before.
Okay, I think that's really helpful. And I think it's useful to remind people about the professional scepticism, because it will feel like, you know, why don't you just believe me? I'm a professional. I know what I'm doing.
It's quite difficult. It's quite difficult, I think, for some of the more junior members of the audit team as well to be asking a senior member of finance. It's good to kind of understand that dynamic, that they are doing what they need to do.
Yes, certainly. I mean, we both started our careers as auditors, and I do remember being terrified of going to ask senior finance people what I assumed was a very stupid question. And sometimes finding out actually, no, they didn't know the answer and it wasn't a stupid question.
Yeah, definitely.
Are there lessons to be learnt or that we can learn to make the audit as smooth as possible? As you said, we've got a common goal of getting to the end, getting it all signed off, clean opinion and all done and dusted, ideally before the summer holidays. So how can we get there?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that we've talked a lot about with our members, actually. And as we are recording this at the moment, we are in the midst of our two-day online audit conference, and that has got a really helpful session on the collaborative audit approach. So if you haven't seen that already, you can grab that on demand on our website. So take a look at that. And we also have got a few papers in our year-end papers section on the website as well, in terms of working well with auditors and working papers. So take a look at those when you've got time. But the overriding message, I think, really, with those is just keep having those conversations, have early communication, ongoing communication. As Debbie said, we both started our careers in audit. And I don't know if it's just because I like talking, but I always found the conversations kind of in advance of the audit, the weekly updates, the kind of log discussions and the discussions kind of before and after audit committee, just to be invaluable, to make sure that everyone knew what was going on, what to expect, and that you could deal with issues. It still amazes me now that you can have a conversation with somebody and both come out of the room thinking you've had a different conversation. So to have that conversation very clearly and to note down, so what does that mean? What's going to change in the accounts? What have we got to do about that? Is really helpful to do on an ongoing basis. It's also helpful to talk about things, you know, like when are staff going to be available? When are they not going to be available? So that you can kind of plan around that. Just all the kind of normal conversations that you'd be having. And I think the other area that really makes such a difference is the working papers that you provide your auditors to have a look at. They can make the biggest difference, I think, in terms of having a conversation about an issue or trying to get some sample testing and evidence and spending the time on that, as opposed to actually spending such a long amount of time on working out how a figure was calculated in the first place, and tying that back. So I think having really clear working papers makes a big difference. So what's in the accounts, what's the evidence for that, and how does that flow through, it makes a big big difference to auditors and to the time that they will take asking you questions. And I do remember one of the first audit managers that I had as an audit trainee, who's no longer with us today, was brilliant and quite eccentric. But he did explain to me early on in my career that reading the set of accounts was like peeling an onion. Bear with me. It was a bit like telling a story, so that you have got a number, X amount in debtors. And actually, by the end of the day, you have got the story of how much is owed by another trust, say, for example, for what reason, and you can really understand it. And to be honest with you, I think that's what held my interest in trying to read an annual report, was kind of reading it like a story, really. And it's there for a reason. So I think trying to make sure you can explain that story to your auditor makes it makes a big difference. The other thing that I always found made the audits work smoothly was cake or chocolate, but that's probably not for today.
I think that's an excellent idea. And yeah, I really agree with you about the working papers. And I always think you might be thinking you're doing them for the auditors, but also think about future you or whoever's going to come after you. You know, so many times you can go back and it makes perfect sense at the time. Maybe it's just the way my brain works, but what made perfect sense a week ago, if I haven't written it down, I'll have no clue as to what I meant the following week. So,
yeah absolutely. It does help in future years as well, I think. So year on, when you've completely forgotten everything, really helpful.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we're going to come on to it in a bit, but one of the things that we're finding this year is people are having to dust down PFI models that they haven't looked at for years. And I suspect those that are supported with good working papers, good documentation, are probably going to find this whole change in accounting much, much easier. So it might not even be next year. It might be, you know, 10, 15 years on, down the line that your working papers might get dragged out and dusted down. And I do like the analogy of an annual report and accounts like peeling an onion. So, I think that's really good. So glad that one's carried on.
I think the other thing probably to remember as well is that both people that are preparing the accounts and the audit teams are working flat out at that time of year. Your brain is not really functioning quite as kindly or with as much patience as maybe you would otherwise have. But everyone is trying to get to the right point. So to write things really clearly for yourself and for auditors to ask really clear questions and to be patient with each other is probably not to be underestimated.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Try and put yourself in other people's shoes and see it from the other angle as well. So how are we doing timing wise in terms of when's all this got to be done and dusted by out?
We lose track, don't we? Yeah. But so it probably is good to remind ourselves actually that the NHS bodies, they do need to have their draft accounts to auditors by the 24th of April this year, which is coming round fast already. And the deadline for the audited accounts is then the 28th of June. So that takes us nicely into the summer if all goes well. But there have been delays, as many people will be aware of, in local body audits, and it does have an impact on the department, the NHS England Consolidated Provider Accounts. And I think last year in the report, there was about 23% of providers and 20% of commissioners that missed the 30th of June deadline. A number of audits were still ongoing at the end of November. It's probably fair to say it was a difficult year because we had the part-year accounts for CCGs and the ICBs there, and external audit capacity is an ongoing issue. So things are looking brighter for this year, and it's from a positive point of view. I don't think we're in quite such the same situation as local government audits are, where their delays go years back and they are long, and there is a plan in place to try and address that. So I think things are moving in the right direction for that. It's good to know as well, I think everyone's got an auditor for 23-24 as we're aware. So I think that's helpful to know. But I think the other deadline that's moved, probably worth flagging, is the value for money work, and that'll have the most impact. So if people aren't aware, the special consideration that came out during COVID for the value for money work to be done after the audit opinion date has been taken away from this year. So like reverting back to pre-COVID times, the value for money work will need to be completed by the auditors for them to sign their opinion on the financial statements. And I think that may have got lost in the midst of the amount of guidance out there and may surprise people, particularly perhaps audit committees. So it's worth making sure that everyone involved knows about that this year.
And am I right in thinking that that's the first time that the sort of the current value for money arrangements have had to be done by that deadline? Because the the code changed, didn't it, just about as COVID hit. So probably I think there's the work they're doing now is probably different to the work they were doing pre-COVID when it was being done to that earlier timetable.
That's a good point, Debbie, actually. Yeah, because that was 2020, wasn't it, the code? So
yeah,
absolutely. So again, going back to what we said earlier, just have those conversations with the auditors about what they're going to be doing, when, what might feel different. I mean, the actual work should be the same as what people have done before, but it will feel different being out and about in real life. And I think this year as well, most people are working on site, as far as I can understand it. There will be, I'm sure, an element of remote working that is of benefit, but I feel like that is probably less so than in previous years now.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's what you're hearing.
To be honest, I haven't really heard anything about that, but it would feel like it makes sense. Yeah, I think there were a lot of, not grumbles, but there were noises about that off-site auditing was not ideal. Obviously, it had to be, didn't it, during COVID, but I think probably it makes sense to revert back. But on the value for money side, I know some firms have different teams doing the value for money work, but also they are now talking to people outside of the finance department. So again, just have a think about who you need to communicate with, that the auditors might be coming at a different time this year.
And that applies to more than value for money as well, doesn't it, Debbie, in terms of the other parts in the annual report? So
yeah, absolutely.
But you have been doing a lot of work with members on the annual report and accounts already this year, and I know that you had lots of conversations as part of pre-accounts planning. What came up most at that's worth us flagging for people listening?
So I think there's three changes to sort of the group accounting manual and all the changes there and the FTR arm. So I think they're worth just flagging up. The big one is the change to financial reporting that I've already mentioned, which is the adoption of IFRS 16 to PFI liabilities. It only impacts, I think it's about a third of provider trusts, but for some of them it will be a big impact. And it, as I said before, it has involved dusting down spreadsheets and models that may not have been looked at for years. The key message coming out of NHS England was to really look at the outputs from the spreadsheet. So the Department of Health and Social Care have prepared a spreadsheet for people, but it's all too easy, isn't it, to put numbers into a spreadsheet and then say, well, that's the answer, without actually looking at the answers to see whether they make logical sense. So to actually take a step back and look at, and again, that's a role maybe the audit committee can take to say, you know, do we understand this? Does that seem to make sense to us that things are moving in the same direction as you'd expect? Again, engage with the auditors early on this one, because it wouldn't surprise me if we didn't find some prior period errors, just simply because it hasn't been looked at probably in this much detail for a long, long time. So it's probably, hopefully it's something that they'll look at early in the process and that you should engage with them.
It could be quite big numbers as well, can't it?
Yeah, very big numbers. Absolutely. And there might be a sort of a benefit to PDC, which I think people are, or that is being looked at the centre, to see whether there's going to be a gain that perhaps shouldn't, you know, that they need to iron out, so that it's not just a gain due to accounting treatment. So, yeah, big numbers. They will have been submitted at month 9 and 10 and 11. So hopefully your NHS bodies will be happy with their numbers by the time it comes to year end. The other two changes are around the annual report, so not the accounts. So they're not subject to detailed audit, but the auditors obviously will look at them. The first of which is phase one of the adoption of the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, fondly known as TCFD. And every single time I write TCFD, I have to go and look up what it stands for, because I still can't remember.
Yeah.
So it doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, does it? Anyway, for NHS bodies that have income of more than 500 million in the year, or more than 500 full-time equivalent employees, they're going to have to do these disclosures. And it's worth noting that the income includes allocations, so ICBs are likely to get caught in this. These are additional disclosures, so that the existing requirements of the GAM and the ARM haven't changed. So this is in addition to the disclosures that people made last year. They need to disclose how the board has oversight of climate-related issues and what the management role is in assessing and managing climate-related risks and issues. And where NHS bodies, which I think is all providers, have a green plan, they need to have a summary of their performance against that plan in their annual report. There's a lot of, you know, cross-referencing to other documents is asked for, so that, you know, sort of copying and pasting large chunks of one report into another. So you can cross-reference to other reports on that one.
And that came out in the GAM consultation for 24-25, didn't it? Backdated to 23-24. Yeah. So that might, it kind of be easily missed, I think. So it's probably one making sure that's on your radar.
Yeah. As we record this, it will come out in the year end, the final set of updates to the GAM for this, for 23-24.
People will be pleased that we struggle with the years as much as they do.
Never know which year I'm in. So you actually need to look at next year's GAM, or is in the FT arm for 23-24. And then the other change, which again is for the annual report, is the code of governance for provider bodies. So this is only provider bodies, and it's an update for FTs, but it's new for NHS trusts. So the code of governance came out in the middle of the year. It was applicable, backdated from the 1st of April 23. And there is an annex in that code that sets out the disclosures that are required in the annual report, that sort of sets out how the governance arrangements work for that particular NHS body. A lot of them are on a comply or explain basis. And interestingly, in the commercial world, where there is an equivalent code, which has also just been updated, sort of further updated even to the one that the providers are complying with, there's a lot of talk about actually the explain disclosures are in some ways more helpful and can be more powerful than trying to sort of bodge something together that just says, yes, we comply with this. So I think the message there is, don't be concerned if you're not complying with the letter of the code, if you can explain that you've got a good reason for that, because, you know, another arrangement is more appropriate, then actually you can disclose that, and that makes much more powerful reading and much more tailored to your circumstance.
I think that is that tailoring the accounts, and I know we've got one of our papers on that. That makes such a difference to being able to understand and make it relevant to the body, isn't it? But those are the things that are new for this year. Are there any lessons to be learned from things that we've been talking about in previous years?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit like you were saying earlier with the audit stuff. You know, the same issues are coming up again and again. So I think in a year where there is, the NHS is in financial difficulty, let's be honest about it, there will be a lot of focus, and I think there is a lot of concern around provisions and accruals and the judgments and the estimates that have been made to come to those. So I think, as you said earlier, the auditors will be looking at that, and as will the board, and as will NHS England, as will the department, because they want to know that the numbers that they've been landed on are the right numbers. I think one of the lessons that seems to be coming out more and more from the audit of the consolidated accounts is the importance of managing public money, which is a document that's actually written for government departments. So it's not easily accessible to NHS bodies, but basically sets out how the Treasury thinks regularity and probity of transactions should work. And I think it is worth flagging, and certainly there had, for the department and NHS England, they both had qualified regularity opinions. You know, there are some transactions that do need approval, prior approval from both NHS England, but also the Treasury. And so if you've got special severance payments of any value, they need to be approved. And then other transactions that might be novel, repercussive or contentious need approval over another level. And then another approval is required. So, for instance, last year there were two NHS bodies that made donations to their associated charity, and they got legal advice that they were okay to make those payments, but that legal advice didn't take into account managing public money, and it was determined that actually they should have got approval from Treasury prior to making those payments. And Treasury declined to give retrospective approval to them. So those were payments were not considered to be regular. Now, because NHS Foundation Trusts don't have a regularity opinion, there wasn't a qualification as such, but it was mentioned in the value for money work by both auditors. So it is worth thinking about managing public money and just having a little look at that to see what sort of transactions need approval. And I think it's an area that auditors are likely to focus on this year.
Another area they'll probably focus on is IFRS 16, I'm guessing, because we talked so much about that last year and all the preceding years. So what's come out of first year of auditing that, Debbie?
I think the general message is, well done, you did it. Everyone got over the line. But it's sort of one of those things where, yeah, you got over the line for that year, but actually you've got to carry on. So the message now is very much, can you embed IFRS 16 into your day-to-day working practices? Have you picked up all the new leases that have been entered into this year, or any adjustments to leases that mean that there has to be a reassessment of asset values or liabilities? So it's a case of, well done, you did it, but carry on and make sure that you're continuing to do it. And I think the thing that people, it certainly caught me by surprise this year, the issue that's coming out this year is actually managing leases against the CDEL limit. So when leases were first mentioned, one of the reasons it took so long to implement was trying to work out how it would work with the budgeting arrangements, because obviously under IFRS 16, a lot of leases are capitalised, which was going to cause a problem. And the message from the centre was generally, well, no, it'd be fine. We'll make sure that the accounting doesn't affect the budgeting. But unfortunately, last year, there was such an underspend against the budget. So everyone was required to make an assessment during the year. And I think probably everyone was a little bit over optimistic, but if you're asked to estimate something, you've not really done it before, you're always going to sort of err on the side of caution, aren't you? And I think all the way up, everyone erred on the side of caution, coming out with a CDEL that was actually far more than was required at the end of the day. There is a sort of view, perhaps at Treasury level, that, it wasn't well forecast and it wasn't brilliant, so this year's CDEL is a lot lower and is actually causing people management issues. So I think embedding the whole lease thing into the culture, making sure people raise the fact that they might be entering into a lease early or that they're looking to renegotiate a lease, all of that is going to make that whole forecasting process much easier. So not only will you get the accounts right, but you'll hopefully in time, it'll be much easier to manage it against the CDEL, and a more appropriate CDEL can be set because people can trust the forecasts that are coming out of the NHS. So I think that's IFRS 16. It has been part of my working life, I think, for the last 10 years, and I suspect it will continue until I finally retire. I think it's always going to be on the agenda.
Indeed.
And then I think the other thing that's probably was discussed quite a lot is the financial position. Obviously, people are in difficulties, but what the auditors are struggling with is how people are recognising income under IFRS 15. So IFRS 15 was adopted, 5 years ago now, probably. It was definitely pre-COVID, wasn't it? So again, it should be business as usual. It should be embedded. It sets out a process for recognising income. In my very basic terms, I always think you can't recognise income until you've earned it, is my sort of way of looking at it. So have you done something to earn the income? And then you can recognise that income. But I think that's going to be another thing that auditors are going to be looking at. They're going to be wanting to look at contracts. They're going to be wanting people to have signed contracts and that variations also are signed. And we're moving more towards aligned payment incentive contracts, which will have a bit of variation in them. So it will be a case of looking to see what evidence you can produce to say, yes, we have earned that income because we have treated that many patients. Therefore, we are that much income is due to us. So I think that will also have a knock-on effect on agreement of balances, which is always an issue.
So certainly lots, I think, for people to be thinking about. Hopefully not too much new, but hopefully our little chat through that has kind of helped flag a few of the bits that might be worth reading a little bit more about. And I think that probably links into some of the year-end materials that we've got, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Hopefully. We try, obviously, there is a lot of material out there and we try to produce the stuff that is value-added to you, that is going to help you through this process. So do a little bit of a sales plug. Our website, we do have a page with all our year-end materials on it to make it easier for you to find. And the URL for that is hfma.2020. 2, as in T-O, / year-end support, which is all one word. The link is in our news and policy section of our website, and then you can either go to projects or simply look at our publications and they'll all be there. Some of them aren't quite ready yet, but we're hoping to get them out. All of them will be out by early April, and hopefully they're useful to you. Those of you that were booked onto pre-accounts planning can go back and review those sessions, and they will be open to you until the end of the audit process. So you can go back to look at those. And those of you that are hub members can look at the recordings from the audit conference.
Absolutely. Sometimes it is nice to have things to read and to watch and listen, isn't it? To pick up the big bits and pieces,
yeah, absolutely,
and see what other people are asking and doing. So I think that's probably enough from us for now. So from both of us, good luck, I think, to all that are involved in the year-end process. Do keep us updated as well with any emerging issues or any tips that you've got that you think it would be helpful for us to share with other members.
Absolutely. So good luck, and thank you for listening to this episode of HFMA Talk, and don't forget to subscribe so that you can keep up to date with all the rest of our podcasts.